This is episode 51 of UFO Encounters. This week I'm reading from Preston Dennett's book, Undersea UFO Base, an in-depth investigation of USOs in the Santa Catalina Channel. When I have guests on my podcast, I read their books to work out questions for the episodes. And when reading these books, I always find such amazing information that never makes it into the podcast. And here, I get a chance to give you a peek into the book. I've put a link to the book in the show notes, and I did seek permission to record the extract, and the author kindly said yes. And so if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. So I'm going to read from chapter 3, which is titled Into the Ocean. And this is the first part. It's titled Three Early Cases. And this is what Preston has written. USO activity in the Santa Catalina Channel and surrounding areas began almost 100 years ago. One of the earliest cases comes from Suzanne Bredlau Trojan, who writes, "My late aunt told me about her nighttime sighting of a cone of light illuminating something out in the channel off the Santa Monica Palisades around 1929. The bulk of the USO activity didn't occur until the modern age of UFOs in 1947 and actually began up in Northern California. One such early USO sighting occurred around July 7, 1947, shortly after the Roswell UFO crash. At 3:10 p.m. on that day, two teenagers walking along the beach at San Rafael near the San Francisco Bay Area saw a flat glistening object emerge from the ocean, fly for a short distance, then dive back into the water 400 yards from shore. Its impact produced a tall column of water, after which the craft slowly sank beneath the waves. It is a brief report, but interesting because it is the first account in which an object was seen actually moving in and out of the water. However, it wouldn't be the last. 1 month later, in August 1947, the Coast Guard received reports of a strange flaming object which fell into the sea. And the next section is titled Navy Tracks USO. Immediately following the above two incidents, steamers going in and out of San Francisco Bay encountered an underwater mountain that would appear and disappear in various locations in the bay. Several ships reported the mysterious mass, calling it a reef or a submarine mountain that had apparently appeared overnight. Another ship reported a large mass underwater off the Golden Gate. Following that, the mass disappeared, or perhaps it just moved again. Around this time, the Navy survey ship Maori and other craft were sent to investigate yet another report of a phantom reef that had appeared about 400 miles off the coast of Southern California. No charts listed any such mass in the area. And when Captain Hambling of the Maori arrived, the mass was gone. They immediately surveyed the surrounding area, and to their shock, they found that the mass had inexplicably moved again. Says Captain Hambling, "Our echo sounders did pick up a strange echo when we were about 3/4 of a mile off the reported location of the reef. It seemed that the sounders had got an echo from a mass about 1,600 yards away. We changed course and started right towards it. 400 yards away from it, we found it had vanished, and we got no other echo. We tracked and retracked the area using fathometers and echo sounders. We covered 5 square miles very carefully and another 5 miles around the outside of the area. The mass, however, had gone. Following this incident, the number of USO reports off the Southern California coast rose dramatically." The next one is titled Burning Object. According to researcher Harold Wilkins, on November 21, 1951, several witnesses observed an unidentified burning object descend into the sea, somewhere off the coast of California. It is a brief report, but at this time, reports of USOs received almost no attention. And the next one is titled In and Out. One early and impressive USO report comes from pioneering researcher Harold T. Wilkins. On August 8, 1954, the Japanese steamship Aliki was off the coast of Long Beach when several members of the crew observed a dramatic USO display. The message from the ship, which was intercepted by the US military, reads, "Saw fireball move in and out of sea without being doused. Left wake of white smoke. Course erratic. Vanished from sight." This is the second example of an object seen moving in and out of the water. This type of sighting is extremely rare. Most witnesses who see a USO see an object diving in the water. The second most common sighting is seeing a USO already in the water. Following this are cases in which people view an object ascend from the water. Objects that move in and out, however, are almost unheard of. Next, we have a section titled Two 1955 Encounters. An interesting USO account was reported by a witness to MUFON. This is what they said. "I have never reported this prior and only do so now after viewing the History Channel program about possible underwater UFO bases near Catalina Island." Preston continues, "It was around 11 p.m. one evening in June 1955 when an employee of North American Aviation in Inglewood headed home after working the late shift. He was with a group of co-workers walking in the parking lot when they felt the air grow warm. It was like being under a radiant heater," said the witness. "This caused us to look up. There above us was some sort of object that looked metallic, but wasn't discernible as to how large it was, nor how high it was over our heads. But it looked metallic as the lights from the airport taxi and runways were reflecting off it. Slowly it moved to west and out of sight." Later, while driving, the witness learned that there had been additional sightings that night of an apparent meteor which was spotted west of Palos Verdes near Catalina Island. According to the witnesses, it left a green trail and appeared to hit the ocean near Catalina Island. Also in 1955, multiple residents from the Northern California coastal town of Santa Maria observed a long silvery object emerge from the ocean and take off into space. The next section is titled USO Saga at Redondo Beach. A now classic case of an underwater UFO in this area took place on February 9, 1956 in Redondo Beach. It turned out to be a particularly well verified and dramatic case involving dozens of witnesses, including many local residents, a night watchman, Redondo Beach lifeguards, and neighbouring Hermosa Beach police officers. It all began around 1:30 a.m. when patrolman Marvin Power and John Freeland and several others reported seeing a large ball of fire glide down out of the sky and float on the surface of the ocean about 200 to 300 feet offshore of Redondo Beach. Resident Martin Dumbrell saw it arrive, as did Redondo Beach police officer Jack Hopkins and lifeguards Frank Redeker and Ted Davis. As the crowd of witnesses gathered and watched, the water seemed to froth, at which point the UFO sank beneath the surface. The glow of the object was so intense that it could still be seen. Redondo Beach officer Jack Hopkins contacted the Redondo Beach police station and requested a Geiger counter. After the Geiger counter arrived, lifeguard Lieutenant Frank Rodica obtained a small rowboat and rowed out to the object with another lifeguard. "It was a big thing," he said. "It was maybe 15 feet across, and it was still glowing down there under the water, almost until we got there. Shortly after they were over the object, it winked out. They tested the area for radiation, but found none." As the object was now no longer visible, they returned to the shore. "Maybe the Martians saw you and turned out the light," said Dumbrell, when Rodica returned and explained what happened. Lifeguard Davis joked, "Or maybe they already waded ashore." After the excitement died down, the lifeguard said that when dawn arrived, they would dive into the area. After the sun rose, lifeguards donned their scuba diving gear and went to investigate. About 40 minutes later, they returned claiming they had found the culprit. The UFO, they said, was not a UFO at all. It was a US Signal Corps Sea Search flashlight with a special water battery. The flashlight had a sensor which turns the flashlight on automatically after 3 minutes of being exposed to water and burns for about an hour. Ida Bell Epperson said, "As usual, there are discrepancies and the reader is left with unanswered questions. The police officers reported the object was aglow before it hit the water. There was also no explanation as to what kept the solid object afloat for 20 minutes or longer and then automatically caused it to sink. If something kept it afloat, why did it finally sink?" UFO researcher Leonard Stringfield agreed with Epperson. "I concur," he said, regarding Epperson's comments. "I might add, nobody heard or saw the aircraft which may have dropped the searchlight." And according to the picture of a searchlight supposedly found, the half-inch bulb certainly would not appear as a ball of fire, as reported by several observers. Also, it was in direct contradiction to further details, including the gliding motion of the object and the large size as described by several observers, including Lieutenant Roediger. 1 year following the incident, in 1957, Stringfield obtained an official report of the incident which said only, "Fireball hits water, submerges." So this week I was reading from Preston Dennett's book, Undersea UFO Base, an in-depth investigation of USOs in the Santa Catalina Channel. And if you want to buy the book, there is info and a link in the show notes. And a great way to support the podcast is to sign up on Patreon. On the Alien UFO Podcast Patreon, when you sign up for $6 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $3 a month, you get an extended episode every month. And if you want to give the extended episodes a try, there is a 7-day free trial. Just go to patreon.com/AlienUFOPodcast. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.